The short man's face looked more forbidding. 700, 700, not 500, at once, this minute, cash down. Mathieu added, feeling something wrong.
What's the matter, Penny?
Don't you trust me? I can't give you the whole 3,000 straight off. If I give it, you may come back to her tomorrow. Besides, I haven't the 3,000 with me. I've got it at home in the town, faltered Mathieu, his spirit sinking at every word he uttered. Upon my word, the money's there, hidden. In an instant an extraordinary sense of personal dignity showed itself in the little man's face. What next? He asked ironically. For shame. And he spat on the floor. Pan Vrublevsky spat too. You do that, Penny, said Mitya, recognizing with despair that all was over, because you hope to make more out of Grushenka? You're a couple of gapins, that's what you are. This is a mortal insult. The little Pole turned as red as a crab, and he went out of the room, briskly, as though unwilling to hear another word. Vrublevsky swung out after him, and Mitya followed, confused and crestfallen. He was afraid of Grushenka, afraid that the Pan would at once raise an outcry. And so indeed he did. The Pole walked into the room and threw himself in a theatrical attitude before Grushenka. Panny Agrippina, I have received a mortal insult, he exclaimed. But Grushenka suddenly lost all patience, as though they had wounded her in the tenderest spot. Speak Russian. Speak Russian. She cried, not another word of Polish. You used to talk Russian. You can't have forgotten it in 5 years. She was red with passion. Panny Agrippina. My name's Agrafina, Grushenka, speak Russian or I won't listen. The Pole gasped with offended dignity, and quickly and pompously delivered himself in broken Russian, Panny Agrippina, I came here to forget the past and forgive it, to forget all that has happened till today. Forgive? Came here to forgive me? Grushenka cut him short, jumping up from her seat. Just so, Panny, I'm not pusillanimous, I'm magnanimous. But I was astounded when I saw your lovers. Pan Mitya offered me 3,000, in the other room to depart. I spat in the Pan's face. What? He offered you money for me? Cried Grushenka, hysterically. Is it true, Mitya? How dare you? Am I for sale? Painly, painly. Yelled Mitya, she's pure and shining, and I have never been her lover. That's a lie. How dare you defend me to him? Shrieked Grushenka. It wasn't virtue kept me pure, and it wasn't that I was afraid of Kuzma, but that I might hold up my head when I met him, and tell him he's a scoundrel. And he did actually refuse the money? He took it. He took it. Cried Mitya, only he wanted to get the whole 3,000 at once, and I could only give him 700 straight off. I see, he heard I had money, and came here to marry me. Panny Agrippina! Cried the little Pole. I'm a knight, I'm a nobleman, and not a lajdak. I came here to make you my wife and I find you a different woman, perverse and shameless. Oh, go back where you came from. I'll tell them to turn you out and you'll be turned out, cried Grushenka, furious. I've been a fool, to have been miserable these 5 years. And it wasn't for his sake, it was my anger made me miserable. And this isn't he at all. Was he like this? It might be his father. Where did you get your wig from? He was a falcon, but this is a gander. He used to laugh and sing to me. And I've been crying for 5 years, damned fool, abject, shameless I was. She sank back in her low chair and hid her face in her hands. At that instant the chorus of Mokro began singing in the room on the left, a rollicking dance song. A regular Sodom. Vrublevsky roared suddenly. Landlord, send the shameless hussies away. The landlord, who had been for some time past inquisitively peeping in at the door, hearing shouts and guessing that his guests were quarreling, at once entered the room. What are you shouting for? Do you want to split your throat? He said, addressing Vrublevsky, with surprising rudeness. Animal.
bellowed Pan Vrublevsky. Animal? And what sort of cards were you playing with just now? I gave you a pack and you hid it. You played with marked cards. I could send you to Siberia for playing with false cards, do you know that, for it's just the same as false banknotes. And going up to the sofa he thrust his fingers between the sofa back and the cushion, and pulled out an unopened pack of cards. Here's my pack unopened. He held it up and showed it to all in the room. From where I stood I saw him slip my pack away, and put his in place of it, you're a cheat and not a gentleman. And I twice saw the pan change a card, cried Kalganov. How shameful! How shameful! Exclaimed Grushenka, clasping her hands, and blushing for genuine shame. Good Lord, he's come to that. I thought so, too, said Mitya. But before he had uttered the words, Vrublevsky, with a confused and infuriated face, shook his fist at Grushenka, shouting, you low harlot! Mitya flew at him at once, clutched him in both hands, lifted him in the air, and in one instant had carried him into the room on the right, from which they had just come. I've laid him on the floor, there, he announced, returning at once, gasping with excitement. He's struggling. The scoundrel. But he won't come back, no fear of that. He closed one half of the folding doors, and holding the other ajar called out to the little Pole, most illustrious, will you please to retire as well? My dear Dmitri Fyodorovich, said Trifon Borisovich, make them give you back the money you lost. It's as good as stolen from you. I don't want my 50 rubles back, Kalganov declared suddenly. I don't want my 200, either, cried Mitya, I wouldn't take it for anything. Let him keep it as a consolation. Bravo, Mitya. You're a trump, Mitya, cried Grushenka, and there was a note of fierce anger in the exclamation. The little pan, crimson with fury but still mindful of his dignity, was making for the door, but he stopped short and said suddenly, addressing Grushenka, Panny, if you want to come with me, come. If not, good, bye. And swelling with indignation and importance he went to the door. This was a man of character, he had so good an opinion of himself that after all that had passed, he still expected that she would marry him. Mitya slammed the door after him. Lock it, said Kalganov. But the key clicked on the other side, they had locked it from within. That's capital, exclaimed Grushenka relentlessly. Serve them right. Chapter 8, Delirium. What followed was almost an orgy, a feast to which all were welcome. Grushenka was the first to call for wine. I want to drink. I want to be quite drunk, as we were before. Do you remember, Mitya, do you remember how we made friends here last time? Mitya himself was almost delirious, feeling that his happiness was at hand. But Grushenka was continually sending him away from her. Go and enjoy yourself. Tell them to dance, to make merry, let the stove and cottage dance. As we had it last time, she kept exclaiming. She was tremendously excited. And Mitya hastened to obey her. The chorus were in the next room. The room in which they had been sitting till that moment was too small, and was divided in two by cotton curtains, behind which was a huge bed with a puffy four rooms for visitors there were beds. Grushenka settled herself just at the door. Mitya set an easy chair for her. She had sat in the same place to watch the dancing and singing the time before, when they had made merry there. All the girls who had come had been there then, the Jewish band with fiddles and zithers had come, too, and at last the long-expected cart had arrived with the wines and provisions. Mitya bustled about. All sorts of people began coming into the room to look on, peasants and their women, who had been roused from sleep and attracted by the hopes of another marvelous entertainment such as they had enjoyed a month before. Mitya remembered their faces, greeting and embracing everyone he knew. He uncorked bottles and poured out wine for everyone who presented himself. Only the girls were very eager for the champagne. The men preferred rum, brandy, and, above all, hot punch. Mitya had chocolate made for all the girls, and ordered that 3 samovars should be kept boiling all night to provide tea and punch for everyone to help himself. An absurd chaotic confusion followed, but Mitya was in his natural element, and the more foolish it became, the more his spirits rose. If the peasants had asked him for money at that moment, he would have pulled out his notes and given them away right and left. This was probably why the landlord, Trifon Borisovich, kept hovering about Mitya to protect him. He seemed to have given up all idea of going to bed that night, but he drank little, only 1 glass of punch, and kept a sharp look out on Mitya's interests after his own fashion. He intervened in the nick of time, civilly and obsequiously persuading Mitya not to give away cigars and Rhine wine, and, above all, money to the peasants as he had done before. He was very indignant, too, at the peasant girls drinking liqueur and eating sweets. "They're a lousy lot, Dmitri Fyodorovich," he said. "I'd give them a kick, every one of them, and they'd take it as an honor, that's all they're worth." Mitya remembered Andrei again, and ordered punch to be sent out to him. "I was rude to him just now," he repeated with a sinking, softened voice. Kalganov did to drink, and at first did not care for the girls singing, but after he had drunk a couple of glasses of champagne he became extraordinarily lively, strolling about the room, laughing and praising the music and the songs, admiring everyone and everything. Maximov, blissfully drunk, never left his side. Grushenka, too, was beginning to get drunk. Pointing to Kalganov, she said to Mitya, "What a dear, charming boy he is." And Mitya, delighted, ran to kiss Kalganov and Maximov. Oh, great were his hopes. She had said nothing yet, and seemed, indeed, purposely to refrain from speaking. But she looked at him from time to time with caressing and passionate eyes. At last she suddenly gripped his hand and drew him vigorously to her. She was sitting at the moment in the low chair by the door. "How was it you came just now, eh? Have you walked in? I was frightened. So you wanted to give me up to him, did you? Did you really want to? I didn't want to spoil your happiness," Mitya faltered blissfully. But she did not need his answer. "Well, go and enjoy yourself." She sent him away once more. "Don't cry, I'll call you back again." He would run away and she listened to the singing and looked at the dancing, though her eyes followed him wherever he went. But in another quarter of an hour she would call him once more and again he would run back to her. "Come, sit beside me, tell me, how did you hear about me, and my coming here yesterday? From whom did you first hear it?" And Mitya began telling her all about it, disconnectedly, incoherently, feverishly. He spoke strangely, often frowning, and stopping abruptly. "What are you frowning at?" she asked. "Nothing. I left a man ill there. I'd give 10 years of my life for him to get well, to know he was all right." "Well, never mind him, if he's ill. So you meant to shoot yourself too, Morrow. What a silly boy. What for? I like such reckless fellows as you," she lisped, with a rather halting tongue. "So you would go any length for me, eh? Did you really mean to shoot yourself too, Morrow, you stupid? No, wait a little. Too, Morrow, I may have something to say to you. I won't say it today, but tomorrow. You'd like it to be today? No, I don't want to today. Come, go along now, go and amuse yourself." Once, however, she called him, as it were, puzzled and uneasy. "Why are you sad? I see you're sad." "Yes, I see it," she added, looking intently into his eyes. "Though you keep kissing the peasants and shouting, I see something. No, be merry. I'm merry, you be merry, too. I love somebody here. Guess who it is. Ah, look, my boy has fallen asleep, poor dear, he's drunk." She meant Kalganov. He was, in fact, drunk, and had dropped asleep for a moment, sitting on the sofa. But he was not merely drowsy from drink, he felt suddenly dejected, or, as he said, bored. He was intensely depressed by the girl's songs, which, as the drinking went on, gradually became coarse and more reckless. And the dances were as bad. Two girls dressed up as bears, and a lively girl, called Stepanida, with a stick in her hand, acted the part of keeper, and began to show them. "Look alive, Maria, or you'll get the stick." The bears rolled on the ground at last in the most unseemly fashion, amid roars of laughter from the closely packed crowd of men and women. "Well, let them. Let them," said Grushenka sententiously, with an ecstatic expression on her face. "When they do get a day to enjoy themselves, why shouldn't folks be happy?" Kalganov looked as though he had been besmirched with dirt. "It's swinish, all this peasant foolery," he murmured, moving away. "It's the game they play when it's light all night in summer." He particularly disliked one new song to a jaunty dance tune. It described how a gentleman came and tried his luck with the girls, to see whether they would love him. The master came to try the girls, would they love him? Would they not? But the girls could not love the master, he would beat me cruelly and such love won't do for me. Then a gypsy comes along and he, too, tries. The gypsy came to try the girls, would they love him? Would they not? But they couldn't love the gypsy either, he would be a thief, I fear, and would cause me many a tear. And many more men come to try their luck, among them a soldier. The soldier came to try the girls, would they love him? Would they not? But the soldier is rejected with contempt, in two indecent lines, sung with absolute frankness and producing a furore in the audience. The song ends with a merchant. The merchant came to try the girls, would they love him? Would they not? And it appears that he wins their love because, the merchant will make gold for me. Kalganov was positively indignant. "That's just a song of yesterday," he said aloud. "Who writes such things for them? They might just as well have had a railwayman or a Jew come to try his luck with the girls, they'd have carried all before them." And, almost as though it were a personal affront, he declared, on the spot, that he was bored, sat down on the sofa and immediately fell asleep. His pretty little face looked rather pale, as it fell back on the sofa cushion. "Look how pretty he is," said Grushenka, taking Mityu up to him. "I was combing his hair just now, his hair's like flax, and so thick." And, bending over him tenderly, she kissed his forehead. Kalganov instantly opened his eyes, looked at her, stood up, and with the most anxious air inquired where was Maximov. "So that's who it is you want." Grushenka laughed. "Stay with me a minute. Mitya, run and find his Maximov." Maximov, it appeared, could not tear himself away from the girls, only running away from time to time to pour himself out a glass of liqueur. He had drunk two cups of chocolate. His face was red, and his nose was crimson. His eyes were moist, and mawkishly sweet. He ran up and announced that he was going to dance the Sabbatier. "They taught me all those well, bred, aristocratic dances when I was little. Go, go with him, Mitya, and I'll watch from here how he dances," said Grushenka. "No, no, I'm coming to look on, too," exclaimed Kalganov, brushing aside in the most naive way Grushenka's offer to sit with him. They all went to look on. Maximov danced his dance. But it roused no great admiration in anyone but Mitya. It consisted of nothing but skipping and hopping, kicking the feet, and at every skip Maximov slapped the upturned sole of his foot. Kalganov did not like it at all, but Mitya kissed the dancer. "Thanks. You're tired perhaps? What are you looking for here? Would you like some sweets? A cigar, perhaps? A cigarette? Don't you want a drink? I'll just have a liqueur. Have you any chocolates?" "Yes, there's a heap of them on the table there. Choose one, my dear soul. I like one with vanilla. For old people. Hee." "No, brother, we've none of that special sort. I say." The old man bent down to whisper in Mitya's ear. "That girl there, little Maria, How would it be if you were to help me make friends with her? So that's what you're after?" "No, brother, that won't do. I'd do no harm to anyone, Maximov muttered disconsolately. Oh, all right, all right. They only come here to dance and sing, you know, brother. But damn it all, wait a bit. Eat and drink and be merry, meanwhile. Don't you want money? Later on, perhaps, smiled Maximov. All right, all right. Mitya's head was burning. He went outside to the wooden balcony which ran round the whole building on the inner side, overlooking the courtyard. The fresh air revived him. He stood alone in a dark corner, and suddenly clutched his head in both hands. His scattered thoughts came together. His sensations blended into a whole and threw a sudden light into his mind. A fearful and terrible light. If I'm to shoot myself, why not now? Passed through his mind. Why not go for the pistols, bring them here, and here, in this dark dirty corner, make an end. Almost a minute he undecided. A few hours earlier, when he had been dashing here, he was pursued by disgrace, by the theft he had committed, and that blood. But yet it was easier for him then. Then everything was over, he had lost her, given her up. She was gone, for him. Oh, then his death sentence had been easier for him, at least it had seemed necessary, inevitable, for what had he to stay on earth for? But now? Was it the same as then? Now one phantom, one terror at least was at an end, that first, rightful lover, that fateful figure had vanished, leaving no trace. The terrible phantom had turned into something so small, so comic, it had been carried into the bedroom and locked in. It would never return. She was ashamed, and from her eyes he could see now whom she loved. Now he had everything to make life happy. But he could not go on living. He could not, oh, damnation. Oh God. Restore to life the man I knocked down at the fence. Let this fearful cup pass from me. Lord, thou hast wrought miracles for such sinners as me. But what if the old man's alive? Oh, then the shame of the other disgrace I would wipe away. I would restore the stolen money. I'd give it back, I'd get it somehow. No trace of that shame will remain except in my heart forever. But no, no, oh, impossible cowardly dreams. Oh, damnation. Yet there was a ray of light and hope in his darkness. He jumped up and ran back to the room, to her, his queen forever. Was not one moment of her love worth all the rest of life, even in the agonies of disgrace? This wild question clutched at his heart. To her alone, to see her, to hear her, to think of nothing, to forget everything, if only for that night, for an hour, for a moment. Just as he turned from the balcony into the passage, he came upon the landlord, Trifon Borisovich. He thought he looked gloomy and worried, and fancied he had come to find him. What is it, Trifon Borisovich? Are you looking for me? No, sir. The landlord seemed disconcerted. Why should I be looking for you? Where have you been? Why do you look so glum? You're not angry, are you? Wait a bit, you shall soon get to bed. What's the time? It'll be 3 o'clock. Past three, it must be. We'll leave off soon. We'll leave off. Don't mention it, it doesn't matter. Keep it up as long as you like. What's the matter with him? Mitya wondered for an instant, and he ran back to the room where the girls were dancing. But she was not there. She was not in the blue room either, there was no one but Kalganov asleep on the sofa. Mitya peeped behind the curtain, she was there. She was sitting in the corner, on a trunk. Bent forward, with her head and arms on the bed close by, she was crying bitterly, doing her utmost to stifle her sobs that she might not be heard. Seeing Mitya, she beckoned him to her, and when he ran to her, she grasped his hand tightly. Mitya, Mitya, I loved him, you know. How I have loved him these 5 years, all that time. Did I love him or only my own anger? No, him, him. It's a lie that it was my anger I loved and not him. Mitya, I was only 17 then, he was so kind to me, so merry, he used to sing to me. Or so it seemed to a silly girl like me. And now, O Lord, it's not the same man. Even his face is not the same, he's different altogether. I shouldn't have known him. I drove here with Timothy, and all the way I was thinking how I should meet him, what I should say to him, how we should look at one another. My soul was faint, and all of a sudden it was just as though he had emptied a pail of dirty water over me. He talked to me like a schoolmaster, all so grave and learned, he met me so solemnly that I was struck dumb. I couldn't get a word in. At first I thought he was ashamed to talk before his great big pole. I sat staring at him and wondering why I couldn't say a word to him now. It must have been his wife that ruined him, you know, he threw me up to get married. She must have changed him like that. Monsieur, how shameful it is. Oh, Monsieur, I'm ashamed for all my life. Curse it, curse it, curse those 5 years. And again she burst into tears, but clung tight to Monsieur's hand and did not let it go. Monsieur, darling, stay, don't go away. I want to say one word to you, she whispered, and suddenly raised her face to him. Listen, tell me who it is I love? I love one man here. Who is that man? That's what you must tell me. A smile lighted up her face that was swollen with weeping, and her eyes shone in the half-darkness. A falcon flew in, and my heart sank. Fool. That's the man you love. That was what my heart whispered to me at once. You came in and all grew bright. What's he afraid of? I wondered. For you were frightened, you couldn't speak. It's not them he's afraid of. Could you be frightened of anyone? It's me he's afraid of, I thought, only me. So Fenya told you, you little stupid, how I called to Alice Shaw out of the window that I'd loved Mityanka for 1 hour, and that I was going now to love another. Monsieur, Monsieur, how could I be such a fool as to think I could love anyone after you? Do you forgive me, Monsieur? Do you forgive me or not? Do you love me? Do you love me? She jumped up and held him with both hands on his shoulders. Monsieur, dumb with rapture, gazed into her eyes, at her face, at her smile, and suddenly clasped her tightly in his arms and kissed her passionately. You will forgive me for having tormented you? It was through spite I tormented you all. It was for spite I drove the old man out of his mind. Do you remember how you drank at my house one day and broke the wine glass? I remembered that and I broke a glass too, day and drank to my vile heart. Monsieur, my falcon, why don't you kiss me? He kissed me once, and now he draws back and looks and listens. Why listen to me? Kiss me hard, that's right. If you love, well, then, love. I'll be your slave now. Your slave for the rest of my life. It's sweet to be a slave. Kiss me. Beat me, ill, treat me, do what you will with me. And I do deserve to suffer. Stay, wait, afterwards, I won't have that. She suddenly thrust him away. Go along, Monsieur, I'll come and have some wine, I want to be drunk, I'm going to get drunk and dance. I must. She tore herself away from him and disappeared behind the curtain. Monsieur followed like a drunken man. Yes, come what may, whatever may happen now, for 1 minute I'd give the whole world, he thought. Grushenka did, in fact, toss off a whole glass of champagne at one gulp, and became at once very tipsy. She sat down in the same chair as before, with a blissful smile on her face. Her cheeks were glowing, her lips were burning. Her flashing eyes were moist, there was passionate appeal in her eyes. Even Kalganov felt a stir at the heart and went up to her. Did you feel how I kissed you when you were asleep, just now? She said thickly. I'm drunk now, that's what it is. And aren't you drunk? And why isn't Mitya drinking? Why don't you drink, Mitya? I'm drunk, and you don't drink. I am drunk. I'm drunk as it is. Drunk with you. And now I'll be drunk with wine, too. He drank off another glass, and, he thought it strange himself, that glass made him completely drunk. He was suddenly drunk, Although till that moment he had been quite sober, he remembered that. From that moment everything whirled about him, as though he were delirious.